Well, good morning. Thank you, brothers, that were up here in the front and speaking to us. It's one of my favorite topics, and that song is one of my favorite songs. By the way, if you want to read an interesting biography, read the biography of Ludwig von Zinzendorf, who wrote that song. Well worth your time and energy. Very interesting man. Well, we're here today to talk about probably one of the most important tasks that God has given humanity. You think about all the things that we can do in life, and I wonder if there's anything more important than being a godly mother. You know, I was thinking about this, and I've actually never preached a message to mothers, or at least exclusively to mothers. I preached on the home a few times, and I was wondering, why is it so often we men, we've been given the task, preachers the word, we're tasked with preaching to people that we're not really qualified to preach to. I'm never going to be a mother. But I do have a deep admiration for mothers, and I have had a mother, as you all have, and I know the power of a mother. And I know the power of mothers in men's life. I'm a man, and I know what it's like to be influenced in a good way by a godly mother. My own mother grew up in what we called the world. The world I grew up in. She grew up in a barely Lutheran environment. Married my dad and joined the German Baptist. There became a part of the Plain People. And there is something about her testimony has been an inspiration my whole life. The ability to step out of a worldly, just, you know, television, popular music, public school, that whole world, and step into a world utterly different and embrace it and be faithful in it. She's now 77 years old, walking in the Lord. That's a blessing. And I would not be here today if it hadn't been for my mother. Another inspiration to me, and when it comes to mothers, and I can get emotional talking about my mother-in-law. She was very instrumental in giving me my wife. I'm very thankful for my wife. A woman of love, integrity, of faithfulness, of patience, of strength in adversity. And that power, if there's any of you women in this room who wonder what's the point of being a mother, it's not, you know, there's other exciting things to do, I would just like to hold up motherhood today. I think about it a lot with my wife, and she has two siblings, another sister and a brother. In the background that we came from, it's pretty common for young men especially to go out and sow their wild oats and do things they shouldn't do. And I know I was around him. He's one of these youngest in the family there. And I watched him as he was growing up. I probably got to know him when what was 11, 10, 11, 12 in there somewhere. And I watched him, and at every turn, he did not want to cause his mother to cry. Tremendous impact to watch him arrange his life around pleasing his mother. The power of a mother today. So I don't know if I'm qualified to speak to mothers, but I do know I've had a mother. I know mothers. And a little bit of a burden on my heart also this morning is to recognize there's no doubt people in this room who would like to be mothers and are not. And I would like to speak a little bit to that. We have a couple in our congregation that's been married 10 years with no children. And it's hard on them. Very hard. It's very difficult. And I can't really relate. We didn't have the easiest time with children. We only ended up with four when it was all done. And it was a struggle, and yet we had children. I don't know what it'd be like to have no children. When I think about that, and I think about what it's, you know, I think even there's a mother's heart in those who don't have children. And I, that dear sister in our congregation, that couple, right now they have a nonverbal autistic child that they just have in their home, and they're trying to be a blessing, and I don't know where that'll all go. But I've watched her. She's a second mother to her nieces and nephews. And there's a blessing, and I know it doesn't really quite fix it. It don't quite fill in that gap. But I know that there is a blessing. You're not, if anybody feels like, oh, it's Mother's Day, one of the worst days of the year, I just want you to know that we care. I care. And I know your congregation cares. And there is a place. God has something for you. And God bless you in that. Something that I think about is that there are those who are young. You're not a mother yet. You're young children. I want you to know, if you're not married, you're young, maybe 12, 13 years old, and you wonder what Mother's Day sermon has got to do with it. I want you to know that most people, the standard, the normal path for most people is they get married and they have children. And so I would hope that you would be a little bit inspired as we go through this message. As you young girls, I hope you can become inspired that this is training ground, just as it is for a young men, the boys in this congregation here. You are in training to become leaders and strength and wisdom and a strong tower and a pillar in your home. And in the same way, you girls are growing up to become mothers. And I hope you get inspired. I hope you have mothers in your life to look to. This sermon will do only a tenth as much good as a good example in the home. I hope your mother is a wonderful example for you to look to and to follow. Praise God for the mothers who are teaching their children how to mother. My own mother wasn't taught well. My grandmother actually worked pretty much every day of her life in a factory. Didn't really grow up with things. She came home from public school. The house was empty. My mother didn't have the training that you in this room are getting. Most of you in this room are getting. Praise God for that. And you boys. Oh, I'll never be a mother. Mother's Day sermon. How boring. I'll just check out. You know, my dad used to say to me fairly often, us children, and of course it was a dating culture. We didn't have the courtship culture, but a dating culture. And he would say this fairly often. He would say to us boys, he said, never date a girl that you would not want to be the mother of your children. You know, he said that often enough, it began to have an impact in my life. And believe it or not, even though I got married at 18 years old, very young, I was thinking about that when I started dating my wife. One of the things I looked to is her mother. And I thought, well, she at least knows how to be a mother. And that's been pretty accurate. And I think that works out most of the time. Don't date, have no interest, boys, in a girl who could not be or will not be a good mother. So you might learn something here today. To fathers in the room, I don't know if you know it or not, but you are called to have a mother's heart. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, the 7th verse, Paul was speaking to the Thessalonians, and he was reminding them of how he acted, how he behaved there when he went to Thessalonica. And he says these words, "But we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherisheth her children." Paul, great Paul. Paul, we just heard about him a little bit. He was a man's man. If he had been in this room, we would all be in awe of this man in our midst. Totally unconfused about who he was. He was a man. And yet, when he was in that congregation, he was gentle. And that word is usually translated in the newer translation. It was amongst them as a nursing mother. As a nursing mother. And you've all seen nursing mothers. Just that sweet and that gentle, that nurturing way. It's a beautiful thing to see a nursing mother singing to her children and rocking. And Paul said, I was among you in that way. So there is something we can learn, we men, we fathers, can learn from the character of a godly mother. Something I would like to say here too is that I've already said it's the most important task given to a woman. I said last night that marriage, a good marriage, is going to come from that settled, that peaceful, that secure place in Christ, a born-again connection to God. And I want to say it's the same in motherhood. In fact, it goes all the way, and you probably, those of you who enjoy science, you know this, biology, you know that in the womb, there is chemicals, there's cortisol and various chemicals running through a woman's body, and the baby in the womb is being affected by the peacefulness or the lack thereof in a mother right inside the womb. And that baby is being prepared. If it's a high-stress situation, the baby comes into the world prepared for a high-stress situation. And you know what? A lot of it just has to do with how the mama is responding to that high-stress situation. So just a general basic peace with God, peace with your husband, peace with life, a settledness about who you are before God can have a tremendous impact, even in the womb, in how that baby comes into the world and responds to the world. It's one of the most important tasks that has ever been given to a woman. I think about what I just said. I think about what I've already said. And I preach pretty practical messages typically, as you're probably gathering. And I've wondered, I've worried. And I've actually had a few challenges at times. Sometimes people come away just feeling kind of burdened. Okay? I hope that this is not a burden. I hope I'm laying before you an inspiration. I would always like to say we point to something high, something good, something right, something holy, and yet give grace to the people who are still down here struggling along in life. You know, we can't always be pouring in grace. We can't always be pouring in mercy. We also have to be pointing to something higher and something holier, and I hope we can do both. I hope this message can do both. You know, a little example I would like to use from Scripture, God was at a time in Israel's history when things were not going well. Eli's sons were not doing well. And God needed someone that he could speak to so that that man could speak to the people. He was looking for someone that he could have a conversation with, someone who would listen, someone who could hear well, and someone he could then trust with his message to the people of God. But first, he needed someone to get over her complaining. He needed a mother to stop blaming her husband, stop complaining against God, stop being jealous of her co-wife, and get on her knees and pray. And that's how Hannah became the mother of the prophet Samuel. And there's a lot there. But I believe if we can have Hannah's heart, you know, Hannah later, she says, "For this child, I prayed. For this child, I prayed." I would like us, if you have six children sitting beside you on the bench here today, I would like you to be thinking of that phrase, "For this child, I prayed." And I hope you continue to pray for those children on that bench today. To have, you know, she lent him to the Lord. You know, a mother, you know, there's a graspingness to being a mother. I know it. I've watched it. There's a protectiveness. But at some level, we have a family in our congregation who has given two of their children to the mission field. We have a daughter on the mission field. And there's times, I'm a dad, I'm not a mom. I want her back. It's not safe over there. My daughter's in Haiti. I just went to visit her here this past 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago. Not as bad as you can read in the news. Haiti is a bad place to be. But there is something about just those arrows in the hands of a mighty man. We have to be willing to give them to the Lord. You know, the hiddenness of being a mother is hard. I think of Mary when she went to the temple. And Simeon met them and blessed them. And he said that he gave a blessing to Jesus. But I want you to notice what he said to Mary. A sword will pierce your soul also. There's a hard place in being a mother. You think about a mother. It says there, and I think it's in Luke, by the cross of Jesus was his mother. You know, we don't know a lot about Mary, but we know that a sword pierced her soul also. And the mothers in this room know what that feels like. Maybe a son has went astray. You know, my brother-in-law was ordained in ministry, and I watched my mother-in-law. There was a pride in her. Glad that her son was serving the Lord in this way, but she was scared for him too. There's just something about just, you never get done being a mother. I don't know if you ever get done being a father either, but there's just something that is just constantly worried and yet constantly caring and constantly on our knees before God for our children. My children are grown up. My youngest will soon be 19. My oldest is 37, I think, or will be 37 this year on the mission field in Haiti. We never get done, do we, being a father, being a mother. But a sword. And it's interesting what it says, what Simeon said, so that, if I can find that, why was a sword to pierce the soul of Mary, so that the thoughts of many hearts might be revealed. I would like, you know, we in our circles, we're Anabaptists and there's the Protestants, and I think we have probably reacted to the Catholic overemphasis and wrong emphasis of Mary. But I've been spending some time lately, and I probably should just preach a sermon on Mary sometime, probably worth my time, but I have been spending some time in the life of Mary. Mary was an amazing woman. I think we in our non-Catholic heritage, I think we probably almost went too far away from holding up Mary as an example. As she, you know, I think of the scriptures here, and Mary said, "Behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word." And Elizabeth said to Mary, "Blessed is she that believed, for there shall be a performance of those things which were told her from the Lord." There is there's just a quietness. The mothers are very seldom out in the forefront. In fact, my observation is, well, the mothers try to be in forefront. They try to be the dominant force. They try to be somebody in their homes. It never works. But when they are in that servant role under their husbands and serving their children, it's a tremendous, tremendous, powerful place. You know, it's probably one of the more famous statements that Abe Lincoln made. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the nation. It is tremendous, the power of a woman. I would like to just hold that up as an amazing, amazing thing, a beautiful thing. I think women know better what Paul meant when he said, "My strength," God said to Paul, "my strength is made perfect in weakness." And it is. And a mother knows that. We men just kind of keep trying to figure it out, don't we? We have strength. In 2 Timothy, Paul writes to Timothy, he says, When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee. Paul is taking courage that Timothy is strong. And the reason why he knows it is he saw a faith that was real. But he goes on to say, "Which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and in thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in thee also." A little bit later, he says this. He says, "From a child thou hast known the Holy Scriptures." His dad is never mentioned. The power of a woman, the power of a mother, all the way to this day in Timothy's life. And the courage that gave Paul. You know, he was leaving. He'd go here and he was going there, and he would leave Timothy behind to do the work. And he had to trust Timothy. And part of Paul's trust in Timothy was he knew his mother was. I would hope and pray there are women in this room who are raising up sons that when we send them out on the mission field or wherever we send them, we can say, I know they'll be fine. I know who their mother is. That's powerful. Powerful. Think about that. In Proverbs 31, 1 through 2, we don't have very many places in the Bible where a mother wrote something in the Bible. We have Proverbs 31. We often think of that as advice to mothers. I don't know if you realize or thought about it. That was actually written by a woman, and it was advice for her son who was a king. But I don't know if you've thought about what it says, how it says it, how she begins. The words of King Lemuel, the prophet, his mother taught him, what, my son? And what, the son of my womb? What, the son of my vows? That's an interesting phrase, and it's translated pretty much that way in the new translations. And if you look it up, there was an intensity. I care about you, my son, King Lemuel. I want you to hear what I have to say. And she gave him advice as a mother. You know, I'm sure he was king by now. He's probably an older man, probably middle-aged. And she still cared. She was still teaching her son. There's a word in the Bible that I want to get to, the word virtuous. That's also in Proverbs 31. You know, most of us, when we hear the word virtue, we think of good. Just, you know, who can find a good wife? Her price is for... No, that's not what it means. A virtuous woman is more than just good. That is a military term. It has to do with valor. It has to do with strength. It has to do with wisdom. It has to do with some leadership gifts. If you look that word up in other places in the Bible, it's mighty men of valor. In 2nd, it's that same word, virtuous, in 2 Kings 24:14. A mighty man of valor is a mighty man of virtue. Virtuous men. It means it's translated competent and skillful men in Genesis 47:6. It's translated able men in Exodus 18:21. Able, powerful, valiant. Who can find a virtuous woman? Ruth was known in her by all the village, Boaz told her, as a virtuous woman. That wasn't just, you know, a good woman. But it was a woman of integrity, of strength, of influence, of character, and most of all, look it up, wisdom. Wisdom. You would go back to Mary. Mary, the mother of Jesus. You know, we often see a Christmas card or the manger scenes, and we just have this meek, mild, soft-faced, doe-eyed Mary. You read the prayer that she prayed when she met Elizabeth. It's called the Magnificat. Because it begins, she magnifies the Lord. It's a Latin word. Read that. It's downfall of kings, the foolishness of men, the conquering God. This is not a doe-eyed Mary praying this prayer. It's valiant. It's enthusiastic. She talks about thrones that collapse. She talks about the humbled. The lords of this earth are humbled. Courageous. Virtuous. Dads often get the credit for their homes, and that's good. I think that's probably right and good that that's the way it is. I have two homes, and I can just basically tell the story as one. In the background I came from, the German Baptist, there was a couple families, and I think it'll be all right just to say their names here in this setting. You won't know who they are anyway. But it was the Baumans and the Hesses. They're strong families, large families. And I knew that a lot of the boys are about my age, each side of me. Some are a little older, some a little younger. And I had opportunity to talk to both of these families. And both times there was about two of the posterity in my home. And I asked them both the same question. How did your family turn out? What was your dad like that your family turned out so well? You know, they're just outstanding families. It's just an amazing. They're two families that are kind of outstanding. One's start in California, the other's in Pennsylvania. And it was interesting, both of them had the same answer. Dad was an amazing man, but it was mom. Really, it was Mom. That was Mom that really we could talk to. It was Mom that held the line. It was Mom that when things got tight, she would step in. You know, we have a family in our own congregation. You know, we probably give Dad a lot of credit there. But you spend much time talking to those boys. Yes, they admire Dad. They quote Dad. They give Dad a lot of honor. But Mom was a woman of steel. She just, when they crashed up against Mom, she didn't move. It made a big difference in that home and still does to this day. That's the way it is. Moms, you have a tremendous power. Tremendous power. In Proverbs 1:8 and Proverbs 6:20, it's almost identical phrase. Almost identical. Both Proverbs, five chapters apart. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Hear your father's instruction, but don't forsake the law of your mother. I want you to hear that word law. That word law is exactly the same word as the Mosaic law. It's the same word as Torah. It's the same word as that which came down from Mount Sinai. The law of the mother. Don't forsake it. The power and the authority of a mother is not a derived authority. It is not something that she gets from her husband. It is something that God has given to a mother to exercise and to be strong in, to exercise it. You know, I think there was a little movement in our day, I probably especially in the early days of what I call the charity movement. It seemed like there was this idea that we kind of almost put dads up here as the high priest in the home. Everything kind of derived down from that. And I think there was a lot of failing. There was this, women kind of stepped back. And you know, I remember we was kind of influenced a little bit by that. The idea was that dads need to do the spanking, the discipline. Mom does the loving, dad does the spanking. And, you know, our first child was born, I told my wife, I said, when I come home, the last thing I want to do is have my children look at me with fear. Oh, here comes the spanker. Here comes the guy with the rod. I said, I'll do it when I'm home. I'll deal with what I see. I'll deal with what needs to be dealt with. But Mom, you are the queen in the home. God has given you an authority, and it's from the Bible, the law of the mother. And I would like to just challenge us to stand strong. You know, we had a lot of stories growing up. You know, the little penny dreadfuls back in the early 1900s. And, you know, Johnny went off and went bad. He drank and went off to sea and did bad things. But it was the prayers of his mother that brought him back. But I want to say, it is the strong mothers in Israel will keep him from straying in the first place. We need strong mothers to be there. And you know, I describe my mother-in-law as a woman who had won the hearts of her children so they did not want to offend or hurt their mother. But I can also say she's a woman. She's only about 5'1 or 2 or whatever she is. Very short. But she's strong. A woman of steel. Be strong. And we get that from God, by the way. Use all the strength at your disposal. Sometimes you do have to go to Dad. And Dad should sometimes back up Mom. That should happen. But there is something I would like to say. I'd just like to counsel the mothers in the room that you don't have to go somewhere else to get your strength. Sometimes you do need a backup. I get that. And that's not all bad. I would like to hold up bearing children. You know, in our world today, there's almost a negative idea about children. A lot of people are not having children at all. There's this idea that we're only going to have one or two. There's a career woman. We've got, you know, it's going to crush my life. It's going to make my life small to be just a mother, just a homemaker. That is so wrong. If there is a job more important than raising up children, I can imagine, you know, feeling like I'm too small for the job, or I'm not qualified for the job, or, you know, I didn't have training. I can understand the humility. But to see it as small and insignificant and not worthwhile is so terribly wrong. I would like to just challenge, an illustration I would give is when we were first married, and some of you probably, grew up on a farm and you bought a farm right when maybe you take care of dad's farm or whatever. You get outside and your wife's right alongside you right after you're married. But in my case, I was off, the lunch bucket, go off to the job with the lunch bucket and left my wife in this little tiny house that I'd bought when I was 17 years old. And she didn't have a lot to do. And it was such a blessing. Women, when they don't have much to do, it's the same with men, by the way. When they don't have much to do, it can be depressing. And we start getting into trouble, actually. It's not good for us to not have enough to do. My wife came from a hardworking family, had a truck patch. All of a sudden, there she was. And there is just something right and good. Don't put off children. It's a good thing. It's just part of jumping into life and enjoying life and doing what God has called you to do. The world would say that I can't handle it. Children, they cut off. They're expensive. Some will even say they're happy not having children. And we're not immune to that. But I would like to say this. The Bible has some very clear things to say about motherhood. I'm going to go through some scriptures real quick. I condensed my notes here a little bit to try to make this sermon at least a little bit short. Or at least shorter. In Genesis 1:28, it says, children are a blessing from God. And I'll just read it. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion. So children are a blessing from God. They're fulfillment of the command to reproduce, multiply, and fill the earth. So there is a blessing and a command at the same time. God doesn't give any commands that don't have a blessing with it, by the way. Children are God's gift to us. You'll find that in Psalm 127 and also in Hebrews and Isaiah. And I'll just read those scriptures. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is His reward. Here am I. It's in Isaiah. It's quoted, requoted in Hebrew. Here am I. And the children whom the Lord has given me. They're a gift. They give purpose and meaning and significance to our lives. That's found in Psalm 127. As arrows in the hands of a mighty man, so are children of youth. Happy, not burdened, but happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. In Proverbs 23, it says, the father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have the joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and that she that bare thee shall rejoice. These are promises and blessings to children and those who have them. And the last thing I'm going to point out is that bearing children naturally is a picture of bearing children spiritually. And I'll just read a couple, and there's more than just a couple in the Bible, but I'll read two of them. As many as received him, to them gave he the right to become children of God. To those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor the will of flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. That's a natural picture illustrating a spiritual truth. Of course, Jesus gave that picture to Nicodemus there in John 3. In Galatians 4:19, my little children, for whom I labor in birth again until Christ is formed in you. That's a pastor's heart sometimes, is just the laboring as if in childbirth. For the church, for the people. In Titus 2, 4 through 5, it's teaching speaking to the older women, they teach the young women to be sober. And I'm going to speak about this passage, and you can look it up if you like. Titus 2, 4 through 5. The older women, they teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste. Keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. There is something about that when women are out of place that brings a curse upon God's name. So let's keep that in mind. So love your husbands. That's the first thing. That word love there is not agape love. It's filial love. It is friendly love. And I would challenge us. You know, sometimes I think there's husbands and wives out there. We had a couples night last night. But I think there's husbands and wives out there who love each other. They would die for each other, but they don't like each other. You know anybody like that? It's the way it is sometimes. They just don't really like each other. They're not friends. The call there is to like each other, to actually have fondness for each other, to enjoy one another's company. The older women are teach the younger women to have filial fondness for their husbands, but also for their children. And that's where I want to emphasize a little bit. If you ever been in a home somewhere where the children are behaving in such a way that you say, boy, I'd have a hard time loving these children. I would have a hard time enjoying these children. And we're going to talk a little bit about home discipline, because that's an important part of a mother's job, especially in the first, for certain the first 5 years, but even up to, you know, I really didn't really get just daily with my son until he was 9 years old. That's probably not terribly uncommon. About 8, 7, 8, 9 years old, we start, you know, we can bring our sons in and they're a little bit out of school, a little bit more. Mothers have a tremendous impact. And if we're going to have children that we love with affection, oh yeah, we would lay down on a train track and die for them. But boy, they're not any fun to be with. And so there's a challenge there. To love your children isn't just to, of course we love our children. But do you have children that are lovable? Sober. They're to be sober. You know, that word there, we think of the word sober a lot of times as kind of, I don't know, maybe not giddy, not laughy, not full of foolishness. It can be that, but it basically means forward-looking, having a purposeful forward-looking. So the older women are teaching the younger women to be purposeful and forward-looking. You know, it's just not day-to-day. You know, a wife is... they're not out in the world. They're not, you know, maybe, you know, meeting the customers. My wife is. She does a lot nowadays in the business. But a lot of times they're just homemakers, but they're not called to be small-minded. They're called to have a big picture. Be sober. That's what that word means. Have a big picture look at the world. You know, some people like the idea of children, but they don't like children themselves. I knew a mother that basically when a child got about 2 years old, they were done with them. They liked babies. They didn't like children. And I don't have to say, you probably already know without me saying any more, that family did not turn out well. It didn't turn out. We had to love our children all the way to even after they're married, by the way. And it says to be keepers at home. And now we live in a day today where you can be at home, but not at home. You can be at home, but your attention is elsewhere. Our technology, our phones, the thing that I can just almost get angry about, if it's allowed to be a righteous indignation, is to see a mother that's supposed to be taking care of her baby and she's on her phone instead. To see her rocking a baby and nursing a baby with her phone in her hand. I would just challenge us as a people. We can go there. We can get there. Maybe we're already there. But let's don't. Let's go back to where the mother, when she's nursing the baby, she has her attention on the baby. And let's have our attention at home. I was thinking about a home and as I was putting together these notes, and I just felt that indignation building up. That the home is not doing well. The children are kind of scattered to the wind. And I know the home well enough to know that she's on her phone far too much. Not doing bad things. It's just their attention is elsewhere. Keepers at home. It's the most important thing. This is your season. This is your time. And you will regret it. If you get to the point your last child is 19 years old and they're not doing well, God will probably bring to mind the remembrance that I did not take the time. I was out there Facebooking, texting, WhatsApping, everybody on the planet, and not paying attention to my children. These things matter. Probably one of the most important things I might be saying today in this time. Extremely important. And that goes right along with the subject of watchfulness. A mother's job, especially in those early years, and probably never really quits, but watchfulness. It's one thing my mother-in-law, to hold her up again, was extremely good. She knew where her children were at all times. Probably still does, actually, to be honest. Watchfulness. Children need watched. Things happen. Children do not do well with alone time. Mother's job, probably the most important thing they'll do, is just know where they're at. Keep tabs on them. Be with them. Be aware of them at all times. A lot of the exploitation and the incest, the horrible things we like to talk about happen, at least in part, because mothers are not paying attention. They're too many naps. They've got their minds elsewhere. Keepers at home. Watchfulness is extremely important. Proverbs 31 says, "She looketh well to the ways of her household." There she knows what's going on in her house. A short leash. These are things that could preach whole messages on child raising. I just like to focus on the things that are close to the mother, close to those first 8 or 9 years of a child's life. You know, a child will start acting out. You know what I mean when I say that? They just start picking on their siblings. They start, getting sassy. They kind of, they're not eating right. There's things going on. I can tell you, they've probably got a guilty conscience. Something is broken in the house. Ask about it. They might have been over to the cousin's house and something happened that shouldn't have happened. Be asking questions. They start acting out. I don't know what's happened to Johnny or Sally. Ask questions. Sit down. Find out. Best thing really is when you're coming home from cousin's house, on the way home, ask what happened. Watchfulness. Carefulness. Be very careful. Try to find the root. Try to find the root. I would like to speak just a little bit about training, because training, there's a teaching. There's a teaching that I think goes to fathers and mothers. But I think it's most ideal if the dad is the teacher. If dad won't do it, can't do it, whatever, that's fine. I understand that. But ultimately, it's just a beautiful thing if dad's doing the teaching. But there's a training side, especially in those young years. Training is not necessarily teaching. You can train a child at a very, very young age, in months old, just 2 or 3, 4 months old. You can start training a child. Training is to correct, or basically to create an environment where a child will do the right thing automatically. We see it in training for military, EMS. All your firemen, your ambulance workers, in emergency rooms. When something happens, there's an automatic response. There's training for an automatic good response in our children. They just aren't going to lie because they've been trained not to lie. When my little oldest daughter was born 36 years ago, and I had this picture. My mother-in-law came over, and just a beautiful picture in my mind. I don't think we ever took a camera picture of it. There she lay. My wife was sleeping and just had the baby, and Karen was laid out on her chest, and Grandma was trying to get a little sleep. The baby was sleeping, and somewhere along the way, my wife or me, I forget, I think it was my wife, asked, "Well, how will we ever know when to spank? This cute, how could it be? They're just, babies so cute. They never should need to be spanked, right?" Well, I tell you what, every child is a son or daughter of Adam and Eve. Okay, let's just accept that. But my wife asked my mother-in-law, when would we know? She says, "Well, as soon as she arches her back and screams in anger, that's the time to give them a smack." And it was a surprise. And I know 4 or 5 months later, it happened. You know how babies do. Pow! Woo! Well, that surprise, and you know what? It only happens maybe twice, maybe 3 times at the most. That's all. We never had a child throw a temper tantrum in our house. They got trained out of that in the first few months of their life. Training. It's just associating. A baby will bite when they're nursing sometimes. You can stop that. They'll not claw out their own eyes. They'll associate pain. You don't have to take them, give them a sermon. This is not punishment. This is just training. This isn't child abuse. It's just associating certain actions with pain. "Oh, I won't do that anymore." And they'll never remember it. It's so early in their childhood. That's training. We can do that. So the point is that we can train our children for good things. I would like to say that punishment, spanking. I was going to speak about it. I don't know. I'm still trying to decide whether I have the time. It's almost 12. What's that? I believe in spanking children. I want to say that. But we didn't do a whole lot of it. I am convinced with all my heart that if you have your child's heart, you have become their source. You have become they want a relationship with you. They have a relationship with you. They don't want that relationship to be broken. They will need, every once in a while, they will need a spanking. That's life. That's going to happen. But, you know, I had a girl that lived with us, and she now calls us mom and dad. And it wasn't a good home. Just have to admit that. It wasn't, that's the reason why she spent a lot of time in our home. And she said when she was growing up, she said she'd want to do something, and she knew it wasn't, she was going to get a spanking for it, and it became a mathematical calculation. Is what I want to do, do I want to do it bad enough that it's worth the pain of the spanking? It becomes a calculation. And a lot of times she chose to go ahead and do it and get the spanking. It was worth it. You know, that don't happen when there's a relationship. It don't happen when there's love in the home. It don't happen when I want that relationship with my mother and now it's broken. They almost want a spanking to get it back again. That's my call to you as mothers. You have that. You probably will have the biggest impact as mothers in those first 9 years of life to create that environment where there's hardly a need for a spanking when it's over. So I've got four reasons to spank. I am not sure I dare do that. I want to speak a little bit more about training, because we're going to just speak a little bit about to the mothers at the early ages. Training. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. You just create this natural response in a child. I was very interesting. Some of you know Uriah. He was on the CAST project, and he was over at Alex's house one day. And he needed to unload some 1,000-pound bales that were on a trailer. And Jeremiah and Rebecca were playing underneath of it. They're what? At that time, they were 7, 8, 9 years old. And Uriah said, of course, you have to know the Hansons. He said, you need to get out from here. I'm going to be going to skid steer and unloading these bales. Well, in a Hanson household, that means they're trained. It's like they went out. As Uriah was heading to get the skid steer, one of those 1,000-pound bales rolled right where those children would have been. It is so important, training for obedience. This is an actual true story. There was a family, I couldn't find the story again, but there was a family that was up picnicking up on the mountains. And they had one of those children that in a situation they hadn't trained for. And the child was running, and they realized was chasing a butterfly. And they said, come back. He ignored them and ran over a cliff and died. These things happen. Down in Tennessee when we lived there, there was a man, I think I read about this one, that saw across the room, he saw his daughter with a brown recluse spider on her neck. And in that home, he trained her. He hollered across the room and he said, Sally, stand still. Don't move. She froze. He went over and flicked that thing off and killed it. What would happen if she'd have... Oh, why? Training. Training is so important. And it's as important as the whole spanking process. I'd just like to emphasize that just a little bit. I am going to talk about the spanking side for just a little bit. Because I think it matters that at the younger ages, it's mother's job most of the time. I hope you've accepted that. I hope I'm not saying something that's going to get me in trouble. But there's four reasons to spank. Dishonesty, disobedience, disrespect, and a bad attitude. I call them the four D's. There's actually two D's in bad attitude. Dishonesty, disobedience, disrespect, and a bad attitude. So in our household, there was one reason we always spanked for. Disobedience, period. Next, never, don't second guess it. Well, I'm not sure he heard it. You know, tell him again. You know, they may be misunderstood. Just get on it. Disobedience is always wrong. we want God to be able to call our children and answer the first time, then we need to get obedience to our children the first time. Obedience. That's very important. Lying. Dishonesty. Use the D word. Dishonesty. God says that we are not to lie one to another, and He gives the reason. The reason is that we're members one of another. If we cannot have a relationship with a child who lies, and don't second guess that one either. Too often, well, he really thought that's what happened. I think he misunderstood. And I've seen great harm come into families when parents will excuse their children's lying. Don't do it. Lying is lying. Now, I realize some children have a high imagination. They might be telling a story because it can't, you know, that's the way their brains work. Even then, it needs to be curbed. I mean, be careful. No lying. That's a clear place to spank. Disrespect. Probably the clearest command in the Bible to children is to honor father and mother. Disrespect. Sass back. You know, firing back. That's a spanking offense. It probably, if you've done everything else right, it's not going to happen. And the bad attitude. Bad attitude is something that's where you're back to that watchfulness thing, mamas. You mamas, be careful about the bad attitude. It's just a body language sometimes. It's passive disobedience. You know, put the plate on the pulpit. Is that close enough? But no. A lot of times a child will just be just pushing the lines. Won't quite put it in the cupboard. Won't quite do what they're asked to do. Passive disobedience. And that is an attitude. We have to get on attitude. It's the direction the heart is leaning. It can be expressed by body language alone. It's usually expressed over time, especially when a child's will is crossed. Disrespect, passive, almost disobedience, but not quite, attitude. If you have to spank a lot, if you as a mother just feel like you've got five children, you've given 30 spankings a day, I would just challenge you, there's probably something else going on. There's not enough time, not enough other kinds of energy being put into the children. And I believe in spanking. I just want to hold that up. But every once in a while I have parents come to me, I don't know, I've had to spank Johnny 10 times today. Whoa, stop. Something's not going right here in the home. There's something, that child, there's a lack of peace, there's a lack of contentedness, there's a lack of relationship. Something's going on. Just look at something. I don't want anybody to feel burdened by that. I don't want you to feel like, oh, now it's even worse. I've got a bad attitude. I'm not a good parent. I want you to do that. I just want us to challenge us to rethink that. The paddle don't fix all problems. It really don't. There's a lot of times there's something else going on. We had a child that had some, we couldn't figure it out. We realize that something is wrong. We end up praying about it, and God did it a miracle in our life and hers. Sometimes that's all it takes. And I it wasn't me, believe me. It wasn't even how good I prayed. It was totally about God. So I don't want to spend much more time on that, but I would like to just get excited about training. You know, electric cords. My only cousin on my mother's side of the family has burns down her neck and all the way down her arm and down her side. She was not trained to not pull on cords. At about 2 years old, she pulled the coffee pot down on her. And it can be trained. We don't ever lock their cupboards. Obviously, there's some things you don't leave on the bottom shelf. But they're just, you train your children and you don't have to lock all your cupboard doors. That's just the way it works. You don't have to, you train them not to touch those electric cords and they're fine. That's the way it works. We have a family in our home. They each child, and they come along. They go through this process, and it's electric cords comes to mind. There's a few other things, but they go through a training process, and you know you can always see their little gears are turning. Look up there, and they get another smack, and the mom is not mad. Nobody's upset. They're training the untrained. There's not rebellion there. There's not anything to get mad about. You don't have to have an attitude about it. You can do it with a smile. Give them a smacking again, one more time. And you know, pretty soon they catch on. Nobody's unhappy. Everybody's good. There's still love in the home. But they're trained now. That's a mother's job a lot of times because dad's off to work. He's out milking the cows or building mini barns or building cabinets or whatever he's doing. I would just like to end on a note here that mothering, there's not a lot of how-tos to mother in the Word of God. Open up the Bible and find a list of mothering commands. There's not a lot. But I would challenge us that the Bible is full of truth. And just a good attitude, a heart of peace, a heart of thankfulness, a heart of joy, a heart of love, having a New Testament heart that's been born again, you know a lot about child raising. You know, I know that, you know, we usually think of angry dads, but I know some angry moms, and it don't work. If there's any one thing that dads or moms need to get out of their life to raise godly children, get anger out of your life, whatever it takes. It's probably the most, if there's any one, I go to a lot of Bible schools, if there's any one thing that comes up over and over again with troubled youth in a prayer room at a Bible school, it's an angry dad or an angry mom. Don't allow it. It's not allowed. Oh, it's just a little bit. And it's not, a little bit is too much. Especially with some children. They react. It just brings insecurity into their life and it creates a disaster. I'm just trying to make a point that New Testament child raising is just a New Testament life lived out in our children, lived out in our home, lived out in our marriage, lived out day after day. The Bible in our homes, peace with God. The new birth being worked out. If it's not going to be worked out in our homes, where is it going to be worked out? Bring it out. Just find out what God wants for you. Now, there's some techniques. I've given some today. But a lot of it is just a heart attitude towards God. Pray. Pray to God. I just told you that we had a situation where that was our only hope. There was our only hope. Be a student. Be a student of your children. Be a student of child raising. I can tell you, our youngest is soon to be 19, and there is, you know, I have no greater joy than know that my children walk in truth. I can tell you, it's not just joy. There is a foundational security in it. I don't know how to put it into words. To have children walk in the Lord and they're walking alongside, they're supportive, and they're blessing and encouraging and it's so much worth it. I guess my point. I want you to know, mothers, it's worth your time and energy. It really is. When you get to our stage in life, and as I see my other gray hairs in the room, when you get to that gray hair stage in life, you will be so thankful that you invested. It's the greatest investment you will ever make. I would like to end with a quote by Susanna Wesley. It hung on our wall, actually, two quotes, one by Susanna Wesley, the other by Charles Spurgeon. They hung on right beside the coffee pot in the kitchen there for my wife to look at pretty much every day there for a long time. I don't think it's there anymore. The parent, this is Susanna Wesley, the parent who studies to subdue self-will in her child works together with God in the saving of a soul. The parent who indulges self-will does the devil's work, makes religion impractical, salvation unattainable, and does all that is in her to damn her child, soul, and body forever. That's a powerful statement by the mother of John and Charles Wesley. Now I want to read the quote by Charles Spurgeon. Mothers, you are as much serving God in looking after your own children and training up in God's fear and minding the house and making your household a church for God as you would be if you had been called to lead an army to battle for the Lord of hosts. And I believe that is absolutely true. Blessed is she that hath believed, for there shall be a performance of those things that were told her of the Lord. The battle for motherhood, being a good mother, is the Lord's. Pray and believe, and God will answer your prayers. God bless you.